I'm Vermont Edition producer Sam Gale Rosen. This podcast has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. On Wednesday, Vermont Governor Phil Scott and New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu unveiled a plan to create a bi-state voluntary paid family leave program. The 18,000 state employees in the two states will form the nucleus of a new risk pool for the program. In Vermont, state employees will be given this coverage as a new benefit. Governor Scott says this initiative will help draw younger people to the state.
Because we know these programs can help improve a company's ability to recruit and retain workers, which can also lead to increased productivity and profitability. And most importantly, an accessible and affordable family leave program will help us attract young working age people looking to start their families.
Will this voluntary approach work, or is a mandate needed that would bring all employees into this pool to make it work financially? Just a few of the questions we have for our guest today. House Speaker Mitzi Johnson. Madam Speaker, great to have you back on the program.
Thanks, Bob. Nice to be here.
So just to start off with, before we discuss the details of specific issues, let's take a look at the political landscape at the House this year. Your caucus picked up 12 seats in November. You now have 95 members. That's considerably more than a majority. Perhaps recognizing the bigger Democratic majorities in both the House and the Senate, the governor in his inaugural address called for some consensus politics at the State House, something that he says is sorely missing in Washington, D.C. these days. Now, the governor vetoed a number of bills last year, and a lot of those are coming back up for consideration this year. So in your mind, how are things going to be different this year when these issues are considered?
I think with Vermonters having said we want to strengthen the Democratic majority in the legislature, they were in effect equalizing the branches of government and, while giving us divided government, really making sure that they were given equal weight. So I think the biggest change in the dynamic is that with these numbers, the governor needs to come to the table in a different way. A lot of the vetoes that we saw when he gave us his explanation for vetoes were small things like just, well, I would have preferred this, or I'm not comfortable with this small piece. Some of them was a wholesale dismissal of the concept, and some of them were small tweaks that had he just come to the table sooner during the legislative process, like every other governor before him has done, we could have worked on it and come to consensus. And so I think with the new numbers and with a post-election new attitude, I think we will see more working together, and I really welcome that.
So consensus implies that you're going to have to give a little bit too, doesn't
sure.
it?
Sure.
So what's an issue where you're willing to sort of take another look at it and say to the governor, maybe we could approach this issue this way?
Well, I think last year with the final budget, the House passed budget really tried to work to pay down significant debt, and the administration wanted to do a temporary buy down of tax rates, and what went to the governor's desk and became law, though without his signature, was something that did both of those things, that bought down rates a bit, that paid down our outstanding debt a bit. And we said, great, we can do this. We're ready to compromise. Here's half of yours and half of ours. How about that? And so I think there are a lot of different ways. This is what I've been doing in the House for a long time when I was chair of the Appropriations Committee, trying to make sure that everybody felt that the budget was taking care of a piece of what they needed.
So if we were having this conversation on the last day of the 2019 session, would you be surprised if there were a lot of gubernatorial vetoes this session?
I think probably still too early to say, because at this point we've heard an interest and in working together, and he's extended a few olive branches in his opening address. I think we will really begin to see if he means it and if he's following through when the budget address comes back and when we start inviting his administration in as we as bills really get underway to say how are you feeling about this? Where are your constraints? What are you supportive of? What can we work on?
Let's look at one of those issues, and that would be paid family leave. Judging by the governor's comments Wednesday at a press conference in New Hampshire, there's no question that he supports a paid family leave program. The question really is, should it be voluntary or should it be mandatory? Now, the governor says if you include the 18,000 state employees from both Vermont and New Hampshire, that gives you the nucleus of a good pool, so this program can be voluntary. Is he wrong?
The larger combined state employee risk pools help make the pricing much more predictable, much more stable within the two states. The larger risk pool increases the interest of private insurance carriers to bid for those opportunities. The economies of scale reduce the administrative costs, and similarly, there are advantages in having an insurance carrier rather than the state.
Now, it's actually New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu making the point that the 18,000 employees would form a really good risk pool, so therefore it could be voluntary. Your thoughts?
I'm excited to see that the governor has recognized that policies that support stronger families and policies that support young people are good for the state and good for business. They're good for creating strong, healthy communities. So that's a big shift from last year. The numbers that I've seen so far are that his program is a little bit more expensive and has half the benefit as what's going to be proposed, and is significantly more expensive than what was passed last year because of the very small pool. When you have I fully support extending that benefit to state employees. That's what the governor's talking about, giving state employees additional benefit, and I'm okay with that. What's needed, though, is to look at the people that can't afford to take time off, the people who are working lower wage jobs, the many, many Vermonters living paycheck to paycheck. If they're choosing whether to take advantage of family leave, getting 60% of their salary, as the governor proposed, is not going to incentivize them to take advantage of this program. We have so many Vermonters, a huge percentage of Vermonters, that don't have the cash on hand for a $500 emergency. And that $500 emergency may be a kid's broken arm. It may be a transmission. Or it may be needing to take time off to care for an elderly parent who's fallen down the stairs.
So just to review the governor's plan, he's mentioned 60% of your salary for a six-week period.
Yes.
You're talking about something closer to 100% of the salary for a 12-week period.
I think that's the bill that will be shortly introduced, and it's a starting place. The bill that was passed last year was I think, 8 weeks at about 80% of one's salary. And I'm not sure that 100% is necessary. I really want to take a good look at because it's an insurance payment, the taxes on it are different. So I want to make sure that the take-home pay is roughly the same as what somebody's used to, because we're talking about making an economy that works for everybody, not just the select few. And there are a lot of people that couldn't possibly afford to take 6 weeks at 60% of their pay. When you think about what we're giving up there by not offering a benefit, we're forcing parents who are welcoming a new child, mothers who've just given birth, people who are settling in a new adoptive child or a new foster child, trying to find childcare, trying to give their bodies time to recover, and that really critical bonding time for a family. Not taking the time for all of those very important things has social consequences later on that we pay for in different ways. And with Vermont's aging population, as is frequently talked about, there are a lot of people who have parents that will need additional care and supports to be able to you know, live with dignity in their senior years. And I think we need to craft policies that everybody can be able to access.
Now, last year's bill put the burden for paying for it solely on the employees. Do you think the employers should have some responsibility as well?
Last year, we also the burden was on employees, and we had there were options. So employers, there was a voluntary part of it where employers could step in and cover that if they so choose. So I think all of those things will be a robust part of the discussion this year, and really glad to have the governor at the table for that discussion.
So you could see asking employers to pick up part of this small payroll tax?
I think we're going to need to look at all of those different things. I think there's some overlap there in last year's version and what the governor's come out with as well for ways that employers could enter into the program, because I think it is a important, very attractive piece of a benefits package that that employers could offer when trying to attract good people and retain them in the workforce.
Let's go to our callers and start today with Jordan, who is calling from Huntington. Hi, Jordan. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Mitzi. In the legislature, there's a call for delaying four school district mergers because of the several lawsuits that have been brought against the state. And I wonder how you feel about that.
Thanks for asking the question, Jordan. I think that's being discussed probably right now at this very moment in the Education Committee, and we're looking at really what's best for the schools and those kids. You know, on one hand, this law has been out there for a number of years, and we have tried to make tweaks in it to accommodate all of Vermont, and. You know, on the other hand, we realize that there has been some conflicting information that has gone out from the Agency of Education, from some of the lawyers involved in the towns involved with the lawsuit, and so we want to make sure that we move forward in the spirit of the law, that we want to make sure to give Vermont's kids much more equalized educational opportunities, and but we recognize some of the very difficult positions that communities are in right now. So we're trying to. I am open to the idea of potentially extending a deadline, but really maintaining the course so that as schools move to comply with the law, they do so in a really good way that works for the children in their school.
As you mentioned, there is some legislation about that, and it's one of the lead sponsors is Stowe Representative Heidi Sherman.
Right now, we are focused on getting this extension. That is where we are focused legislatively, because it will be virtually impossible if the plaintiffs are successful in their suit. It will be virtually impossible to unravel those merged districts once they're merged.
So just looking at this from a practical point of view, you've got some districts who have filed a lawsuit to block this from happening because they feel that voters in their communities do not support these mergers. So those lawsuits have been filed. Yet at the same time, they're supposed to be working with these districts that they don't want to merge with on school budgets to start on July 1st. So some people would say until this whole system has been adjudicated by the courts, and it may go to the Vermont Supreme Court, why not just put everything on hold?
So that's part of the question. In addition to the lawsuits, there are communities that just haven't done or haven't completed or haven't voted to agree on how to proceed, on what their articles of incorporation might be, on how their boards would be set up on in a merged district. And we want to make sure that we're really keeping what's best for the kids and the opportunities available for the kids at the center of this discussion. And, you know, some of the reasons you mentioned are exactly why we're even considering the extension of that deadline. it can be very confusing for the electorate of the school district to be thinking about what a merged budget would look like at the same time that they're thinking about, well, how would we maintain individual districts if we weren't forced to merge. So at this point, the State Board of Ed has made their ruling, which I respect. And so I think we're trying to look at making sure we did this a little bit last year as well, where we tweaked some things and created a little bit of room to make sure that the conversations happening were focused on the kids, were focused on a quality outcome, and were focused on outcomes that work for the communities.
Let's talk to John, who is calling from Stratford. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Bob. Speaker Johnson, this past year, the state's bond rating was downgraded, largely due to our underfunded pension funds. This is going to cost the state tens of millions of dollars. It's a problem that will take more than putting surpluses in when we have them or requiring more of new hires. Shouldn't this issue, the pension fund issue, be a priority for the legislature before we add new benefits? Should we cover the benefits that the legislature has already provided?
John, that's a great question. And when you read the report from the rating agencies, it's not the pensions in isolation. It's pensions as they relate to economic growth in the state. So it's important to address both. And we've already taken a number of steps to address pension funds, which are just beginning to take effect. So, yes, we absolutely do need to do more than putting surplus funds towards pensions. I would have put even more surplus money towards pensions last year, but in an attempt to compromise with the governor, diverted about $37 million away from the pensions. the steps that we have taken are that we have stopped paying for health care, retiree health care, out of the corpus of the pension fund. That is a huge savings to Vermonters. We have set ourselves up on a different, if you will, amortization schedule. So we in starting in 2020, the budgets that is being developed this year, we are going to be prepaying some of an additional amounts of that liability and just making more aggressive payments to them. That step, which we agreed on 3 years ago and have built up to seriously take effect this year, which I fully intend on following through on, that step and following through on it will save Vermonters nearly $200 million over the next 20 to 25 years. There is some discussion right now about how to deal with an internal loan and using some money this year to get that loan off the books. The state treasurer has been remarkable on this. She has been tirelessly educating legislators and working with us to establish these new amortization payments, to make changes not just to how we pay for benefits, but she also did fantastic work in renegotiating what the benefit is so that folks who benefit pay into the system a little bit more. And that saved Vermonters over the life of the obligation, again, millions and millions of dollars. So this is a critical piece, and I think we are on a much stronger track now, and we'll begin to see some of the results of that very soon. But it's very much on my mind, and on, you know, provided we stay on track with what we've promised, we're going to be in much better shape.
John, thanks for your phone call. Let's turn to Suzanne, who's calling from Vershear. Hi, Suzanne. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Yeah, I just related to the school merger. I just wanted to ask, in the way I understand it, it seems as though you've lightened up a little bit in the intensity of forcing school districts to merge. And I'm just wondering how that, if that's correct, and if so, how you imagine that sits with the districts that were so very reluctant to merge and I'm sure wish that they hadn't done it or hadn't had to do it. So that's my comment.
Suzanne, thanks for your phone call. Suzanne raises a really interesting point, because you did have some districts who said, we don't really want to do this, but the law says we have to, so we're going to go ahead and do it. Do you have to be careful in whatever remedy you come up with that you don't start to unravel everything?
Yes, which is why we're not lightening up. As Suzanne says, we are not lightening up on the requirement. We're not saying we didn't mean it. We're not letting anybody sort of out of the law and exempting anybody from the law. We are saying that we recognize that, you know, as we're getting closer to the deadline, some of the very toughest cases are still outstanding and need a little bit more time, and so we're giving a small extension.
We've got a couple of emails dealing with climate change. One is from Maggie Cosgrove, who is a junior at Harwood Union High School, also a member of the Vermont Youth Lobby. She's wondering, what are your plans to take action on climate change given the recent IPCC report? And what's your stance on carbon tax, Maggie would like to know. Now, on the other side of this issue, we've got in an email from someone in the Northeast Kingdom who says people in the Northeast Kingdom will be destroyed by a carbon tax. Where I live, people have to routinely travel 50 to 100 miles a day, minimum wage jobs in old cars. So when they lose their travel ability, the state will have to make up wages. So, and there's no public transportation for the most part in the Northeast Kingdom. So this person thinks a carbon tax would be an absolute disaster. What are your thoughts? You've got a lot of people at the State House who are interested in passing a carbon tax this session. Do you think that's going to happen?
So first of all, thank you so much for the question, Maggie. Thanks for your activism. And thanks to the person from the Northeast Kingdom for these concerns. I think there's a lot of misinformation about the carbon tax, and I know I have constituents very, very concerned about it, who think that their gas prices are gonna, you know, jump by 80 cents or a buck tomorrow. I think that climate change is one of the most critical issues facing us right now. Vermont is a very small state in a very big world. We are not going to solve the problem. Nobody thinks that Vermont is going to be the key to absolutely solving the problem. We also, though, can't walk away from it. So last year, I asked every committee to pass some sort of legislation within the jurisdiction of their committee that would help to lower Vermont's carbon footprint and set us up for a more strong and resilient future. And most did that. Some were small bills, some were very significant bills involving efficiency standards and weatherization and the use of technology and telecommuting. I am concerned about creating tax policy that is wildly different than our neighbors. Most Vermonters live within 20 or 30 minutes of a border. So I don't think that it is economically realistic to have a wildly different taxation structure than our borders. I also agree that with the caller from the Northeast Kingdom that rural Vermonters don't have a lot of options. So part for the proponents of a pretty hefty carbon tax, the thought is that it dissuades them from using the thing that's creating the problem. And then that money goes into, you know, some sort of alternative. But we don't have the alternative built out yet. So if we discourage people from driving, they can't get to work. They can't get their kid to school. They can't go grocery shopping. We need to think about it in the reverse way. We need to think about what some of those alternatives are. I made some significant changes to the Transportation Committee specifically to try to deal with some of these things. I think public transit could be one of these keystone issues that helps us to make progress on a number of different problems. We currently have sort of separate regional transportation networks, and not that we're going to realistically get public transportation out to everybody, but I think we could do a better job of funding them better so they could provide more services and coordinating them, the regional networks, better so that Vermonters can get from A to B a little better. The new chair of the Transportation Committee has a strong background in public transportation. He uses it frequently. He used to work at the Agency of Transportation and work doing a lot of advocacy work in public transportation. And so I think providing alternatives to help reduce the need for cars not only helps with our carbon emissions, it helps low-income people, it helps seniors or people who, for whatever reason, can't drive, and it helps move people out of poverty. Two of the big hurdles we see in moving people out of poverty and maintaining stable jobs are transportation and childcare. And so by trying to make progress on both of these issues, it solves a number of different problems, both moving people out of poverty, creating a stronger workforce, lowering our carbon footprint, and just, you know, creating an economy that works for everybody. Things like weatherization, things like working with our neighbors for regional solutions to these problems are going to be really key. So the climate change is a huge priority of mine. I think there are a dozen different ways that we can make progress on that problem, and I think people have been unfairly focused on one particular idea, namely the carbon tax, that doesn't encompass the full range of possible solutions that are going to help Vermonters in a myriad of ways without actualizing the fears that people have over a carbon tax.
Wouldn't the supporters or some of the supporters of the carbon tax say they like your idea about public transportation? They like your idea of weatherization. You're talking about spending a lot of money on these various programs, and they're saying that's exactly why we need a carbon tax, so you've got the money to pay for this infrastructure that you want.
Sure. But it's a chicken and the egg thing. And there are And I'm not willing to sacrifice rural Vermont, in order to create that funding source. I think there are ways that we can slowly begin to bend the curve in the right direction. But in addition to all of these other issues that we're looking at, an issue that is facing all rural states nationwide, when I talk with speakers from rural states all over the country, red or blue states, is the struggle that people in rural America have you know, their incomes are not keeping pace. They're not attracting young people. Populations are declining. They're seeing declining school enrollments, and doing things that could further hamper a quality of life and an ability to be successful in rural areas, I think would be a big mistake.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Tim, who's calling from Waterville. Hey, Tim, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for letting me on. So there's a number of issues that are going on in the State House, and it's a busy session, but one of the things I noticed that's falling through the cracks is the issue of the corrections and private using private entities, specifically that we have guys in Mississippi, and we're using private health organizations to help people who are in prison. And I mean, as we found out this summer through the Corrections Oversight Committee, the system is not working. As a matter of fact, there seems to be money that's gone missing, as I understand it. So I asked the speaker this question. What is the plan? Is there a plan to phase out the use of these for-profit entities with our correction system?
Tim, that's a great question. We have had a policy for, gosh, a good long time now to reduce the number and eventually eliminate the number of Vermonters going out of state for prison. It's not just the fact that they are private prisons and the moral issue of people making money off of folks imprisoned and the conditions there. It's also really looking at the broader dynamics of how to transition people back into their communities and their families and into life after a correctional facility. I'm not sure about the count right now today, but just a couple of months ago, I know we were at the lowest number of Vermonters out of state for prison in a decade plus. So we have been slowly bringing down the number of people out of state. Corrections and institutions, it is not at all falling through the cracks. The Corrections and Institutions Committee and the Appropriations Committee certainly look at these issues on a regular basis, and we're constantly tweaking policies to be able to reduce the use of out-of-state prisons and out-of-state beds, and trying to look at what that population needs. There is an element of public safety for sure, but we also want to make sure that we're finding good ways to transition people that have earned it back into society in a productive way here in Vermont. And I don't think sending them out of state is the best way to do that.
We are almost out of time, but a lot of folks are wondering about marijuana this session. Senate leaders say they're going to vote on a tax and regulate plan in the next 3 weeks. We have about a minute left in the program. Will we see that bill come to the floor of the House before the end of the 2019 session?
We'll be taking it up in committees. We have a very, very new House. We have the largest freshman caucus that we've had in 10 years – or sorry, 20 years. We've had the largest number of turnover of chairs in 15 years. And so we'll be taking it up. We'll be – and looking at the new landscape to look at what's happened since legalization July 1st and what the best way to manage that legalization is moving forward.
Would you like to see it pass?
I still have some concerns about it, so I'm actually quite undecided. I'm concerned about youth usage, prevention, and road safety. I recognize that there are reasons that every other state that's chosen to legalize has chosen to go with a tax and regulate system, and I appreciate that there is a kind of a chain of custody and a consumer safety issue. And so our committees will be taking a really good look at it. We'll be looking at the governor's report that's coming out and trying to weigh all of these issues.
A lot of issues for us to follow in the coming weeks. House Speaker Mitzi Johnson, many thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you very much, Bob.